This podcast series for people living with tube feeding is brought to you by The Beat from Nutritia. This information is intended for people who are tube feeding at home, their families and their carers, including those registered on Nutritia Homeward. In this mini-series, we have partnered with Helen Hines. Helen is a dietitian specialising in home enteral nutrition in Sheffield. She is a member of the British Dietetic Association and also on the committee for the Parenteral and Enteral Nutritional Specialist Group. You will hear from both healthcare professionals and people who have experience living with tube feeding, and we will cover a range of topics, including what is tube feeding, how to talk to others about your feeding tube, and where to find out more information about tube feeding. This podcast series is all about supporting you with tube feeding at home. The information contained in this podcast is not intended to replace the advice or recommendations of healthcare professionals. Please consult with a qualified medical professional for any healthcare concerns or medical advice.
Hello and welcome back to episode 2 of our podcast. In this podcast, we will introduce you to your tube feeding support team. On this episode, we have 3 guests. We have Phil Roberts, who's a dietitian. We have Kerri-Ann Brent, who's a speech and language therapist. And we have Matthew Mehmet Richardson, who is a homeward nurse. So I'd like to welcome you all to the podcast. Great to have such great experience and expertise in the room. So I'm going to start off by going through everyone's introductions. So Phil is a familiar voice that we heard in episode 1. Phil is a home enteral feed tube dietitian who works in Leicestershire. He has over 16 years of experience in this area. He loves the fact that his role enables him to build good relationships with patients, carers and their families, sometimes over extended periods of time. Unique to Phil, he is also a pint ambassador and he has helped set up a support group for people on parenteral nutrition and on enteral tube feeding in his area, which is absolutely brilliant. I'd like to introduce Kerri-Ann. So Kerri-Ann Brent is clinical lead for acute speech and language at East Sussex Healthcare NHS Trust. She manages hospital inpatients with a variety of conditions, but her specialist interest is in stroke. She is really passionate about delivering personalised care for patients and is often involved in decisions around tube feeding in the trust. So great to have you on board, Kerri-Ann. And last but not least is our wonderful Matt Mehmet Richardson, who's one of our homeward nurses in Sheffield. Matt works as part of a team of nurses supporting children on tube feeding in Sheffield. He is really, really passionate about preventing hospital admissions and empowering patients, their families and carers where possible to manage their tube feeding at home. He works with Nutritia, who work in partnership with Sheffield Teaching Hospitals. I love this part. Matt is currently in his dream job, but if he had to choose another job, he would love to be a Formula One driver. So to start us off today, Phil, I'm going to come to you first to introduce the role of the dietitian.
Hi Helen, nice to speak to you today. How it often works is we would often get a referral. It would sometimes come from a consultant, sometimes a GP, and sometimes from a speech and language therapist. And basically, it would normally be at the point where we're at the stage where the patient is starting to struggle with their swallow and they are thinking about having a feeding tube, but just want that little bit more information. As we kind of mentioned previously, a lot of people with at the stage of considering a feeding tube will never have met another person with a feeding tube, so it is always kind of quite new to them, and they've got like lots of questions. They'd like to know what a tube looks like and want to know a bit more in terms of how their life will change with a feeding tube, how things will change, and really discuss what their concerns are, and hopefully to get that little bit of reassurance. A key thing that I would say at this point is it is a big decision, and sometimes people don't know after 45 minutes, an hour, what their answer is sometimes. And we certainly do kind of encourage people to take some time to think about it. People may need more information. People may need you to come back. But it really is, from our perspective, when we first meet that person, about supporting them, giving them all the information and putting them in the best position possible to make that decision.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree, Phil. It is a really big decision, and having the right support and the right information available is really important for patients. what I really liked in Carrie Ann in your introduction was that you really seem to be really passionate about supporting patients with that decision-making process, and that's a really key part of your role in your trust currently. So Carrie Ann, I think it'd be really great to hear from you from a speech and language therapy perspective, how you support people who are considering or who have had a VNG placed.
As a speech therapist, we assess the person's ability to swallow. So this will involve assessing their ability to swallow food and drink, and hopefully be able to find safe things that they can have. That's the ideal situation. There's lots of different reasons for swallowing difficulties. So there isn't a sort of one size fits all approach. You very much have to know your patient, know their history, know their condition, about what is perhaps causing the dysphagia or swallowing difficulty, to then be able to help that person know all the options that are kind of available to them. And what is a key thing that we're looking out for is to ensure food and drink aren't going down the wrong way, and that's called aspiration. So with these patients, like I said, hopefully we'll be able to find safe recommendations, but this isn't always the case. Or perhaps the person is able to swallow a little bit of something safely. It might only be a few spoonfuls, and then obviously we need to consider the person as a whole, that they can't survive on a few teaspoons or a quarter of a meal. So that's where we work really closely with the dietitians in terms of, you know, how are we going to help that person meet their needs by kind of other means. So yeah, I would say probably most of my role is in that pre-discussion phase, or again perhaps approaching those discussions about feeding tubes, and working together with that person and the other professionals to give them that information to help make that decision.
So Carrie Ann, you mentioned that your role as speech and language therapist currently is mainly based in the hospital. So if you did have someone who was going to require tube feeding in the longer term, are there any colleagues of speech and language therapists in the community that would support patients, and what would their input be with the patient?
Of course, yeah, that's definitely the case. We can see people all along their journey of care, whether that be in hospital or in the community. We continue assessments depending on the person's condition, whether that will be a kind of a rehab approach to help that person improve and get better, or whether it's sort of supporting perhaps a progression of a chronic condition and the changes that will go with that. So it depends very much on the person, but we do have services that cover the person's needs and what input they need depending on where they are in that journey and physically where they are as well.
That's great, Carrie Ann. Another kind of key professional that works very closely, particularly with dietitians, when a person is discharged home into their home environment, is the homeward nurses. So I'm going to let Matt join the conversation, just explain your role with people who are discharged on tube feeding.
Yeah, so thanks, Helen. What we like to do, if we possibly can, if we've got the referral in time, is to go meet the child and their family before they have the tube put in. Then we can sort of build a bit of a relationship, instead of turning up one day and they've just gone through this procedure, which can be quite difficult for a child and their family. So if we meet them early and we can get a nice bit of a personal history from the family, we get histories on the referrals from the dietitians and other professionals in the hospital, but we can sometimes get a bit of extra info from the families, and it can help us tailor and personalise the care a little bit for the kids.
Could you explain to us how a homeward nurse works closely with other professionals to support a person who has had a feeding tube placed?
Yeah, sure. So we work with loads of different professionals, from GPs to district nurses to all the therapists that you might see in hospitals, such as physios, OTs, speech language therapists. They've all got equivalents in the community. With GPs who have to kind of know something about everything, they might not have all the answers for gastrostomy tubes, so they might come to us with questions on things related to gastrostomy tubes. Then there's carers, whether they're professional carers or family members who are caring for somebody with a feeding tube, who can provide training and support for them. And then we've got on the children's side of things, we've got kids who are in not just in specialist school, but also in mainstream schools. So we'll go and provide training and ongoing support to schools as well.
That's great, Matt. It sounds like there's a lot of different professionals that you work really close with, and effective communication is key just to make sure that person on tube feeding feels really supported and they're really aware of who they need to go to if they want a particular question asked. We all clearly tie in very often together. We link in very often, but it would be really helpful, Phil, I'll come back to you to kind of tell us a bit more about how as professionals we all work close together and how we communicate.
I think the key thing is that when you've got somebody with a feeding tube, you've got all these different kind of professionals working together, and the patient is in that centre. And the key thing is that we as professionals all communicate regularly and consistently with each other to allow that patient to get the best care possible. In terms of some examples of how I would communicate and work with other professionals and the type of professional I work with, you talked about speech and language therapist in the community. Obviously, you've got Kerri-Anne working in the hospital. I work very closely with kind of Kerri-Anne's colleagues in the community in my area, because our job is so closely linked. As I say, we talk about tube feeding, and most of the conditions that I see involve people with swallowing difficulties and the speech and language therapist. So there's a big overlap, and we've often, as I say, got the same people on our caseload. What we find is the closer we work together, the better care that person gets. Sometimes that communication is via telephone, sometimes that communication is via email, sometimes we are on the same electronic system so we can access each other's records. But to me, my favourite, and I think the best way of working with colleagues like our speech and language therapist, is doing joint visits together. So a change that the speech and language therapist may make to their swallowing recommendations may affect the change that we make, and a change that we make may affect the change that they make. And I think the people we look after really appreciate that kind of joint up thinking. Mm-hmm. I also think that, you know, we're professionals are very appreciative of that person's time. They may have other commitments, they may go to work, childcare commitments, children may be in school, etc. And, you know, if you can kind of condense that workload, do it together, it really, I think, benefits everything. So that joint working is crucial.
Yeah, I completely agree. Effective communication is so important, and I think it provides reassurance to that person that these people are all working together to support me. I wonder, Kerri-Anne, is there anything you'd like to add from the hospital perspective about how you communicate with other professionals?
Of course. So I think what I find really beneficial about working in the hospital is all the other professionals are physically on site. I think just another point to add is, as you mentioned at the beginning, I have a passion for helping people who've had strokes, and in that population, unfortunately, a lot of them have difficulties communicating their wishes because of their impairment. So often in that situation, it's difficult to talk to that person themselves because they're no longer able to tell us what they want. And not a lot of people, you know, talk about these things before they happen. So in that sense, we have those meetings and involve those closest to the person to make a joint decision. It's not on their shoulders. We're a team, and that's how we work together in the hospital.
I really like that message, Kerri-Anne. The person is at the centre of all the decisions. We're there to support and ensure they've had all the information they require to make an informed decision, but it's very much they're very much part of all of that. Matt, you mentioned earlier that you try to get to know your children in hospital very early on, because that really helps the transition onto tube feeding. Can you explain to us at what point you tend to get involved?
We'll generally receive a referral to provide discharge training for patients themselves, or for their carers and family, or for children's parents or carers or grandparents, older brothers and sisters, anybody that can be involved in their care. And we'll aim to get that discharge training provided within 2 days of receiving a referral, but we generally try and get them done sooner than that. I think it's really important to to get the information to the correct people as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And in terms of who we work with to provide this, it's probably easier to say who we don't work with, really. But I think our most direct colleague in this scenario is the home enteral feed dietitians, who provide us with any information that we need about tube feeding the patients, whether they're adults or children. They've got all the information for us to provide the absolute correct information and training to everybody.
It would be really helpful for us to explain what questions people on tube feeding often come to us. As we know, it can be a big change in someone's life, and not just for them, but for their family. And so, Phil, I'll come back to you. Just explain what kind of questions you'll commonly receive from people on tube feeding, and how you support them with their questions.
Okay, so as you say, it's such a big change going home with a feeding tube. And normally I find as dietitians, actually, the first time we meet them when they do go home, kind of questions related to nutrition are normally a little bit in the background. It's more kind of the practicalities that we get asked, kind of, you know, where do I get my feed from? Where do I get my equipment from? And a lot of things, like somebody with a feeding tube, they'll often get some of their stomach contents coming up the tube, and they'll look at that and they'll say, oh, is this normal? And obviously we've seen it hundreds of times before, and we know that it's normal. So again, a lot of the questions are, what should I expect? What's normal for me looking after the tube? Quite often as well, I will see people who've come out of a hospital, and they will tell me, I've been put on this plan in hospital. It worked for me in hospital when I had these nurses around here when I was on the ward 24 hours a day. But actually, now I'm home, I want to do other things. I've got kind of childcare responsibilities. I go to the cinema every Sunday. I've got a full-time job. I've got to do all these things. And I'm a bit worried that the plan in the hospital isn't going to fit in with my life. So a big key part of our job is, when we first see somebody, is accepting they've been put on plan A, but all of a sudden plan A is not going to work with them in the home environment. So it's trying to work out now what plan B is, and we may go back in a couple of months and things have changed and we move on to plan C, but our plans are always adaptable to meet the changing needs and the wants of the people we look after. But a key part of my role when I first see somebody is, even if I don't know the answers, being able to signpost them to the professional who will know the answer. Sometimes people just need a recap of what they should be doing, or just get somebody to watch them and make sure that they're doing things correctly. Often it is that reassurance of, I think I'm doing it right, but do you mind just watching me flush my tube just so I am completely sure? So again, a lot of it is about reassurance.
That's really helpful, Phil. I completely agree. Actually, when they're back in their home environment, that a lot of those questions come up, and I think we're really well placed to support answering a lot of them. And as you say, signposting to other professionals that can help. One kind of key tip I always say to patients is to write a list of kind of key contacts. So if they are worried, they know exactly who they need to contact. Because one of the most confusing things is trying to track down that person that you met in hospital. So Matt, I'll get you to come in at this point and explain what kind of key questions do you receive from people on tube feeding on a daily basis in your job?
The two initial questions I'll get early on in the tube feeding journey is, What should I do if, and can I still? Lots of different can I stills. Can I still go in the hot tub? Can I still go on skydiving exercises? Can I still? We've had scuba diving come up as well, actually. I think for most of the population, tube feeding is something that isn't really, people aren't so aware of until it happens to them, or if it happens to one of their loved ones or one of their friends. That's where we can try and help. I mean, I don't have all the answers. Like Phil said, if I don't know the answer myself, I know who to ask. The what happens if tends to be a little bit more specific. So what happens if the tube comes out? What happens if it blocks? What happens if I lose an extension for a button? Knowing that they can ring someone, that they can ring us, they can ring the home enteral feed dietitians, I think that's the the message that I try and put across the most, that they are not on their own. We are here. Nobody's on their own.
Yeah, I really like that message. There's always someone at the end of the phone, and we're always there to support. I'd imagine that the questions that people on Tube Feeding have in the community may differ slightly when they're in the acute setting, or maybe when they're a little less well. So Kerri-Anne, I'll come to you. What would you say the key questions an acute speech and language therapist in the hospital may receive?
So I think a lot of the questions we get will be when we're trying to make that decision. So I think people want to know a lot about how it's inserted and the actual procedure itself. I think specific to speech therapy, people want to know, can I still eat and drink if I have a feeding tube? I think that's probably maybe the main one we do get asked. So just kind of reassuring people, if you were eating and drinking before, you will be able to eat and drink kind of afterwards. Some people ask, you know, how long will I need the tube for? So again, it's just informing people, it very much just kind of depend on their condition and why we are thinking about that tube in the first place.
I think we've really highlighted there how we all really work together, and how if we don't know the answer, there's always someone on hand who does. What would you say is your the highlight of your role? What makes you go to work on a daily basis with these people on tube feeding? So I'm going to come to you first for this one.
So that's a really interesting question. I think as well, for me, people aren't in the hospital very long, so I don't always get to build those really strong relationships with people. But I think just being a part of someone's life where, you know, they're in that really, really stressful and emotional phase, and being able to hopefully help them in some way, and also just really kind of advocating a lot for their wishes. As I mentioned before, a lot of patients I see might also have communication difficulties. So just being able to support them to be able to still express what they want and communicate that to the other professionals. And if I can help in any kind of way in that situation, I find that really kind of rewarding.
That's great, Kerri-Anne. It is important that the person's wishes are made clear in the way that is most appropriate for them to communicate this, especially with their speech and language therapist support. Matt, I'm going to come to you next with the same question, please.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one, though, because it kind of changes from week to week. I've always said I do love a good tube change. I don't know why, it's just something I enjoy. And I think with the urgent tube changes, it means that I've kept people out of hospital for admissions that didn't need to take place. But there's a little thing that I have a bit of competition with my colleague in the paediatric side. There's certain kids that we like to see on a Friday afternoon before the weekend, because you go into the weekend, if you've seen them and you get these amazing smiles, you go into the weekend feeling really great about your job. There's such a range of things going on, which is something I never expected when I took the job. Everything's different every day. I know that's a bit cliche, but it's absolutely true. And we get to work really closely with our colleagues in the NHS as well, and we've got some great relationships and there's some great people that we work with. We're very lucky to have this job. So it's all positive.
Probably like we said earlier, Matt, we could probably go on and on about why we love this job and why the people on Tube Feeding that we work with inspire us on a daily basis to keep going. Phil, I'm going to let you come in here now to explain why you love your job. You've been doing it for a long time, so I'm really looking forward to hearing your experience and also your experience as PINT ambassador.
Yeah, I mean, to me, to kind of share a common theme, is that ability to really make a difference, whether that's by improving a person's nutritional intake, hydration, and improving their health, or from that practical element that we talk about, being able to change, as I talked about before, be able to change things so they can lead a more independent life and kind of live life to the full. And I just think that the satisfaction that I get when, you know, a change that you recommend to a person, and then you see them again and they will tell you how much of a difference of their life that change has made, whether it's just really simple things like changing the timing of their feed, changing the way they feed, but also, you know, encouraging people to, you know, do things that they did before, and also going on holiday. It's just something like going on holiday, when I see a person off with a tube, they're absolutely really scared about going on holiday. How do I get my equipment? How do I get my feed over? What happens if I go wrong? And, you know, giving them support to do something like going on holiday. And then when you see that patient again at home, we can then see all the kind of photos and things that show them having a good time. And, you know, that really is why I'm in this job, to make people, you know, lead the lives that they want to lead and not be restricted by the feeding tube. And Pint's a really good example of this. I've been able to put on these kind of events, put these people together. And a big thing that I kind of came from one of the Pint meetings is I spoke to a parent of somebody who was there with their child who had learning disabilities. And what that parent wanted to know more than anything was how it felt like when a feeding tube was flushed and their child was unable to tell them what it felt like. And they spoke to one of the people in the group who was independently looking after their tube, and they found that really useful and interesting to know. So things that I never ever would have thought of as a health professional were what that particular people wanted from these meetings. And everybody takes different things from those meetings, so again, it's just being able to support the people and make their lives different in as many ways as possible.
Yeah, that's really, really great answers from everyone. I hope that's been really helpful for those listening. I'm going to come to Carrie Ann. So if you were advising someone on how they could get more information about your role or about tube feeding, where would you direct them?
So I would say, just to reassure them, there's no silly questions. So first of all, just don't worry about it. Better to ask than to, you know, sit and worry at home. I think, or locally in our trust, we will ensure people have kind of written information. So I would kind of go back and refer to kind of your information provided either by us or the other kind of teams around. If it's not clear, then our contact details should be on there to kind of speak to someone kind of about it. There's loads of information as well online.
That's great. Matt, I'll come to you next. So where would you advise people on tubing to look for further supportive information after listening to today's podcast?
The first thing is that I'm always happy to answer any questions, or try to answer any questions that I can, so they can call me on. We provide our contact details to patients on discharge, as will other nurses who in other areas who see patients. We've also got home enteral feed dietitians who are always more than happy to offer support to the patients that they look after. There's a really good resource on the Homewood website online that's available to everybody. I'd recommend that.
Perfect. And Phil, I'll come to you. Any other resources that we haven't mentioned that you would recommend as being really helpful?
Similar way, we would give everybody an information pack when they're discharged. And I would say no silly questions, you know, get in touch with us, ask them. We're always like a phone call away. Again, we talked about Pint before, and I would really kind of point you in the direction of Pint. Pint do their own website, and the website's full of information, both in terms of about feeding tubes, looking after your feeding tube, but also patient stories. They do email newsletters as well, where people talk about their journey, either as somebody with a feeding tube or looking after somebody with a feeding tube. Pint have kind of internet forums where you can chat to other people with feeding tubes, kind of get some advice, and also Pint meetings. As I kind of said previously, I do one in Leicester, and there are various different meetings scattered around the country.
Thanks, Phil. Pint is a fantastic resource, and I would certainly encourage our listeners or their family or their carers to look into the resources you recommended. I just want to thank you all. I want to thank Carrie-Anne, Matt, and also Phil for joining our episode today and sharing their great experience with our listeners. We hope everyone finds this episode really helpful and joins us again for future episodes. Thanks again.
To keep up to date with future episodes of this podcast series from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more updates on the show, plus lots more resources and help on tube feeding, please visit nutritiahomeward.co.uk.